Very recently, I have been fascinated, really incredibly fascinated, by the leadership of a CEO by the name of Horst Schultz, and he is the co-founder of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Group that is one of the leading luxury hotel brands these days. And under his leadership, they have literally rewritten the books on guest services and in hospitality. In fact, he is now a sought-after speaker all over the world, addressing all types of organizations, even pastors, which is where I was first introduced to him. But he's addressing all sorts of organizations about creating the best guest or the best customer experiences. And what they have learned and what they teach and what they do is so incredibly fascinating to me. That the guest experiences they create are really actually, when you read about them and hear about them, they're pretty remarkable. But what I love most of all is what they have learned with careful study, with careful observation, with careful research. For instance, here's this one. They discovered that if a guest comes within 12 feet of an employee of a Ritz-Carlton hotel, that they have entered a zone in which that guest is kind of assuming that they would be engaged or that they would be greeted in some way. So every employee at a Ritz-Carlton hotels, at a Ritz-Carlton hotel knows that they need to interrupt whatever activity they are doing. They need to drop everything to greet or to assist a guest if that guest comes within 12 feet of them. Right? That's what they've learned, that they've got 12 feet. Someone enters 12 feet, boom, they got to engage. Right? That's so fascinating to me. We could learn so much from that in and of itself. But here's the one that really caught my attention about what they have learned about, you know, their experience at their hotel. Here's what really caught my attention. Ritz-Carlton hotels will send employees out into the lobby with bottles of water or with glasses of champagne or small snacks for any of their guests that are waiting too long in the line at the check-in desk in the lobby. So that they're very serious. They don't want guests waiting too long. They don't want guests waiting, and they don't want guests growing too upset if they're standing in line. And so here's what gets me. When Ritz-Carlton first began, they discovered that if a guest, their observation, their study, their research, that when they first began, they discovered that if a guest had to wait more than 4 minutes, he or she got upset. They had 4 minutes before they needed to make matters right. Today, it's 20 seconds. 20 seconds. Decades ago, 4 minutes. That was the limit. You had 4 minutes to make this whole deal right. Today, it's 20 seconds. Folks, I don't really know what has happened to us, but we do not like to wait any longer. I don't like to wait if I don't have to. We don't like to wait in line. We don't like to wait for our latte at Starbucks, right? So we order ahead from our phone so that when we walk through the door, it's waiting on us, right? We don't like to wait for our food at a restaurant. I was just out with my family this weekend, and we waited. I kid you not, we waited for just about an hour to get our food. And with an 8-month-old baby on my lap and my wife 2 hours away at a women's retreat, an hour felt like an eternity. No one likes to wait on stuff. I know I don't. But it's one thing to wait for a cup of coffee. It's one thing to wait for your food to show up. We can manage that. We can deal with that. But it's a whole other thing. It's a whole other thing completely to feel like we're waiting maybe on God. It's a whole different ballgame when it feels like we're waiting on God to show up, to do something in our life that we've been waiting for him to do. And I don't really know, but I just kind of want to ask you, and you don't have to raise your hand, but just answer to yourself, right? Do any of you ever find yourself, and maybe right now, do you ever find yourself waiting on God? I mean, I think no matter of where we would kind of classify ourselves on this spectrum of faith, I think when we're in waiting, all of us are going kind of like, hey, God, do you see what's happening here? And so I wonder if any of you ever feel like you're waiting on God, waiting for God to come through for you. You know that he can. You've seen him do it for other people, but now he's not doing it for you. And so you're asking, like, why not? Where is God? Why doesn't he seem to care? Why isn't he listening to these prayers that I'm praying? Why am I still waiting? Right? You might be waiting for God to provide the right job for you. You might be waiting for God to surround you with the right kind of people in your life. You might be waiting for God to do a miracle in your family or for God to do a miracle in a relationship of yours. Maybe you're waiting for a house to finally sell. Maybe you're waiting for that magical day when life finally slows down. Maybe you're waiting for a storm in your life to pass. Maybe you're waiting for a misunderstanding to be cleared up. Or maybe you're waiting for a big giant mess in your life. Maybe one that you created. Maybe one that someone else created. Maybe you're waiting for that mess to be cleaned up. I know that we all know what it's like to be waiting on something that matters to us. And it's hard. I mean, sometimes it can be downright depressing to be waiting on God to kind of come through for us, for something that matters for us. And when we're waiting on God, I think we not only ask, why, God? Why is this happening? But most often we're also asking, when? When is this going to be over? When is all of this, whatever that is for you, when is this going to come to an end? When is this going to change? When is this season in my life going to get better? When am I finally going to catch my break? When is my time finally going to come? When is all this going to become clear to me? When is God going to really come through for me? If you're taking notes this morning, here's a key thought that I want you to think about as we continue on talking about what it's like to feel like we're waiting on God. Here's a key thought. That just because God is making us wait, it does not mean that he is running late in our lives. Just because God is making us wait for something, it does not mean that he is running late. I've heard it said before that God's delays are not God's denials. It's so true. Just because God is maybe asking us to wait for something, it does not mean that he is running late. In fact, I think that in that season of waiting, I actually think something really good. No matter how hard that season of waiting feels, I actually think there's something really good that can happen. That season is going to pass, yes, but I think there's a really powerful lesson that we can learn in the middle of those seasons of waiting, and that's what I want to talk about today. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at a really powerful story in the New Testament book. It's the book of John. It's written by a guy named John. It's a story about two sisters, Mary and Martha, and their brother Lazarus. They're all very close friends with Jesus, and they, as well as a whole bunch of other people in their life, they're waiting on Jesus. They are waiting, wondering when in the world is he going to show up. They are waiting on Jesus, but it's in the waiting where Jesus is doing some of his greatest teaching. And that's a little bit of what I want us to see today. So here is why, in this story, here's why everyone is waiting on Jesus. We're going to pick up in chapter 11, and here we find out that Lazarus is sick. He's sick. Verse 3 says this. So the sisters, this is Mary and Martha, sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. The one you love. This just shows how close they are with Jesus. They don't even have to call their brother by name. They know that when Jesus hears this, that he'll know that they're talking about Lazarus. And so the question then is, how will Jesus respond when he receives the word that his good buddy is sick? Maybe you think he'd drop everything. Like, you know, he'd drop everything and beeline it right for his buddy. Maybe they thought that that's what Jesus would do. Drop everything, I'm on my way. But that's not quite what happens. Look at verse 4. But when Jesus heard about it, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God so that the Son of God, Jesus, will receive glory from this. So Jesus is saying, okay, now it looks all good. He's saying, people are going to freak out. Yeah, but you just got to trust me on this, folks. He's saying, it's all going to be okay. Okay, so get this. Although Jesus loved Mary, although he loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, get this, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. They're saying, Jesus, you got to come. This is not looking good. And although he loved him, he stayed put. He stayed right where he was for the next 2 days. And finally, he said to his disciples, okay, now let's go back to Judea. Now, keep in mind, when it's time to go, they couldn't just like catch a red-eye flight, right? They couldn't like, be, you know, this wasn't a quick deal. They were walking, they were hiking it on foot in sandals. And so he stayed for 2 days, it said, and then he and all his disciples, they started out for what was at least a day's journey to Judea from where they were. If I'm his disciples traveling with him, they knew that what was going on. If I'm one of them, I'm thinking like, dude, what is he waiting for? I mean, what's he doing? Just wasting time here. If I'm one of them, I'm going, man, his close friend, the one he loves, is on borrowed time. And he's not doing anything about it. And I got to imagine Mary and Martha, right? Lazarus' sisters. I got to imagine they're feeling the same way. Those few days had to feel like the longest days in their life, waiting on Jesus, their close friend. Right, waiting on Jesus to come to the aid of their brother, but he is taking his sweet time. Eventually, what we'll read here, eventually he shows up, but it was too late. Okay, eventually he shows up, but it was too late. Skip down to verse 17. When Jesus arrived at Bethany, which was in Judea, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. He's way too late. Lazarus died. Jesus didn't show up in time. And Mary and Martha are wondering why. Look at verse 21. Martha actually talks to him. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had only been here, if you would have only been here, my brother would not have died. She's saying, if you wouldn't have been late, if you wouldn't have just kept us waiting, this whole deal could have been avoided. So Martha wants to know, what happened here? I mean, how could you let this happen? She wants to know what happened, and so does everybody else on the scene. Mary and Martha, they actually had tons of visitors who came to see them at this time. Friends and family from near and far, which was typical in that day. So there's a lot of people there, and a lot of them are mad too, wondering if Jesus really did care. And in one moment, Jesus actually is overcome with emotion at the whole deal, and he's crying. And here's how they respond. Verse 36, the people who were standing nearby said, see how much he loved him. Some of them are going, look, he's crying. See how much he loved him. But some others said, this man healed a blind man, but he can't even do anything for Lazarus. He healed a blind man, but couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying, they want to know. And so they're thinking, geez, he's out there healing the blind. He's out there making the lame walk. He's out there performing miracles for people that he doesn't even know. But he can't do anything for his buddy Lazarus, the one he loves. See, I think a lot of times we get the same way when God seems late in our life. We're going like, come on, God, why me? Why are you making me wait? I'm a good dude. I go to church. I brought a bag of groceries today. I read my Bible. I serve on the kids' team. I love my wife. I love my kids. I don't even skip pages when I read to them at night. I'll do the whole deal, God. Like, I'm a good dude. Why are you making me wait for this? I think this is how they're feeling in the moment. Okay, but we got to remember, Jesus was running a whole different play. Remember, he said, no, don't worry. Don't worry, folks. You're going to freak out. He said, don't worry. The sickness won't end in death. He says, just hang with me here. And it didn't. Jesus, we'll read in just a moment here. Jesus Jesus brings Lazarus back to life. And so with everyone gathered outside the tomb, here's how this plays out. Everyone's gathered outside the tomb of Lazarus, and Jesus says, roll the stone aside. Jesus told them. He's saying, okay, let's do this. The time has come. But Martha, the dead man, Lazarus' sister, she protested, Lord, he's been dead for 4 days. The smell, it's going to be terrible, right? She's thinking, bad idea. Man, I don't think this is going to work anyway, not going to happen. And not only is it going to smell, but there's also something else going on here, right? John's the one recording this story, and he keeps making sure to include a detail that everyone keeps mentioning. And the fact that John includes this tiny detail is very important. He keeps including this detail that Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. He said it a few times now. It's been 4 days since he's been in the grave, right? His sister says, hey, it's been 4 days since he's been dead. This is a really significant thing. Here's why. It was a well-known Jewish belief in that day. Right, and these were pretty much Jewish people. It was a well-known Jewish belief in those days that the soul of a dead person hung around in the vicinity for 3 days, hoping that it could maybe, possibly re-enter the body. And so for 3 days, the soul's going like, so you're telling me there's a chance. But on day four, decomposition sets in, and the soul, they believe the soul departed for good. And so John, the one who wrote about this event, he wants to make it absolutely plainly clear for all of us that Lazarus was truly dead. Right? He wants to make it clear that he was dead and that the miracle that's about to unfold, he wants to make it clear that it cannot be mistaken or misconstrued or misunderstood as just some kind of resuscitation. And so here's how this whole deal unfolds. Jesus responded. He's there with the whole crowds. He said, didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory, what? If you believed. Pay attention to that kind of thinking. In verse 41, so they rolled the stone aside, and Jesus looked up to heaven and said, Father, thank you for hearing me. And I love this part. He says, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me. But I said it out loud for the sake of these people standing here, so that they will believe that you sent me. And then Jesus shouted, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out, his hands and his feet bound in grave clothes and his face wrapped in a headcloth. And Jesus told him, unwrap him and let him go. And here's what happens. Verse 45, many of the people who were with Mary, many of the people who had come to be there, many of the people who were upset, many of the people were going, man, how could you let this happen? Many of the people who were with Mary believed in Jesus when they saw this happen. Dude was dead. And everybody was mad that Jesus was late. But Jesus brought him back to life. Just because God makes us, just because God might ask us in a season of life to wait, it doesn't mean that he's running late. It does not mean that he does not care. It does not mean that he does not have it all under control and that he is not working for our good. God's timing is different than your timing and my timing. And God's motives are different. And God's motives here, the one thing that I think he really wanted that we see over and over again, the one thing he wanted was for people to believe. The one thing he wanted was for something to happen in the hearts and in the lives of the people who were gathered there. And because of God's timing here, because of the specific timeline that Jesus was working on, that nobody else really understood, because of the specific way that this all unfolded, many people's eyes were opened. It says that many people who were there believed in Jesus when they saw this happen. They put their faith in Jesus. And that's what he wanted all along. He clearly seems, in this whole scenario, this whole episode, he clearly seems more concerned about who believed and who put their faith in him rather than how quickly he granted the things that everybody wanted of him. Jesus acted as quickly or as slowly as he did because it was the only way to increase the faith of the people that were gathered there that day. That was the only way that this could happen. He did it on purpose, but that's not, honestly, that's not just me making that up, that this is what he was all about. Jesus said it himself. If we rewind back into the middle of the story, when everyone is waiting on Jesus, where is he? What's he doing? Lazarus is sick. If we rewind back into the middle, Jesus is traveling with his disciples who are going with him to Judea to finally go see Lazarus. Because remember, he stayed where he was for 2 days and then they took off, right? So now they're all traveling, making their way, and they're having this conversation. And so I want to jump back into verse 11. Jesus said to them, "Our friend Lazarus," right, the disciples, this is their buddy too. He says, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up." And the disciples said, they're thinking, well, hey, this is good news. Lord, if he is sleeping, if that's all it is, he will soon get better, right? They thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping. But Jesus meant Lazarus had died. Verse 14, so he told them plainly, "Fellas, Lazarus is dead." And then he says this, and this is what I really want us to hear this morning. And he said something similar just a little before, but here's what I want us to hear. He said, "And for your sakes," guys, Lazarus is dead. He's not sleeping. He's dead. "And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there. For now, you will really believe. So come, let's go see him." It's pretty bold. He says, "I'm glad that I was not there. I'm glad that everybody is upset. I'm glad that everybody thinks that I'm running late. Because now what's about to happen is going to blow everybody's minds." He's going, you know, if I show, you know, it's not a huge deal if I show up when Lazarus has got like a cough and I go like, "There you go, buddy," right? That's not a huge deal. If he's going, now what's going to happen is going to blow people's minds. And apparently this was the plan all along. It wasn't a mistake. It wasn't that Jesus didn't care. It wasn't that he was kind of like running late or lost track of time. "For your sake," he says to them. "For your sake," he said to the people listening to his prayers. "For your sake," he says, "I'm glad I wasn't there. I did this on purpose." Jesus is saying, "Look, boys, I know what I'm doing. And I took my time for a reason, because now with the way this all unfolds, and it only this way, God's power is really going to be on full display. And the faith of everyone who witnesses this is gonna increase." No one got what they wanted when they wanted it. But in the end, everyone got what they really, truly needed. And it all worked out better than anyone could have ever written it up. And what that says to me is this, that when we're in a season of waiting, we want God oftentimes to do something for us, but he oftentimes wants to do something in us. Let me say that again. When we're in a season of waiting, we often want God to do something for us, right? Come on, God, could you just hand it to me. Could you just give it to me? Could you just make it stop? Could you just make it better? Could you just do the miracle? Could you just kind of set me up? Could you just kind of drop this into my lap? Come on, God, I'm a good dude, could you just make it happen, please? Why? But sometimes he wants to do something in us. Sometimes he wants to do something in our faith, in our hearts, in our lives before he does something for us. And I think that's the lesson we can often learn in the waiting. That's the lesson that God has actually been teaching me over the last couple years. That there's something in me, maybe, that God wants to do before he does something for me. That's the lesson that God has been teaching me, a lesson that I started learning in the season before I started Mid-Current Church. In fact, the decision to start this church was actually confirmed in many ways when I realized the hard way, I'm for real about that, when I learned the hard way that there was something that God wanted to do in me, maybe more than he was prepared to do something for me. See, a couple years before I decided to start Mid-Current, I was invited to consider the possibility of taking a new position at a really awesome and vibrant and growing church. And I was really excited about this because it felt like the opportunity that God had been preparing me for. If I'm honest, the prior 10 years that I had been in ministry, it felt like a big, giant season of waiting. Nothing really, if I'm being honest, I kind of was in some really awesome places, but nothing really ever felt right for me. Everyone around me seemed to have it figured out. My older siblings had life and career all figured out, and my colleagues kind of felt like they had got it all figured out, and they hit the ground running, and I'm going, so why not me? Why does nothing feel like this is working really that well? I knew that God had called me to this, but I never really hit my stride, and so I always felt like I was waiting for the next, waiting for the right, waiting for my kind of big moment, waiting for my one big opportunity to come. And so this position at this church, it felt like that. When it came onto my radar, I thought, man, this is it. I mean, this is what I've been waiting for. I even said no to the first opportunity to plant a church because of this position, right? In my mind, I'm going, whew, the waiting is over. Except I kept waiting. Communication with this church got a little less frequent. Timelines, you know, seemed to kind of slow down a little bit. So I'd check back in and everything looked promising. But hey, you know, there's just a few more conversations that we got to have behind the scenes. But it's all good, right? They're saying, hey, a few more T's needed to be crossed. A few more I's needed to be dotted. But by X date, they'd say, we should have something for you. And so then X date would come and go, and I heard nothing. And so I checked back in, and the process felt a little less clear, a little less certain, and then communication was almost like non-existent. And I'm waiting for my moment. Communication was almost non-existent, and then one day out of the blue, I got an email from them. But it wasn't a personal email. I was on their midweek email list. And so I got an email along with thousands of other people informing me that the position that I was kind of in line for was not a position any longer. I was pretty devastated, to say the least. And at times, I almost kind of just bagged this whole pastor deal. It's like, oh gosh, forget about it. Felt like just giving up. I never did, but I tell you, I kept waiting. Kept waiting for what God could do for me. I'm a good dude, God. You make it happen for me. Not long after, I was invited to attend a training for potential church planters, which is what this deal is considered, a church plant. And so I agreed to go, and it was at this training that I kept hearing the same thing, which wasn't the thing that necessarily our facilitators were training. They were talking nuts and bolts and, you know, all the strategies and things, but I kept hearing the same thing. I've never really heard God's voice audibly before. I never really have, but the same thought kept coming over me, this thought that God maybe wanted to use my next step, whatever it was, that God wanted to use my next step to do something in me rather than to do something for me. And so all of a sudden, I started realizing that other opportunity was so attractive and it was so appealing to me because it would have been an opportunity that made it so much easier for me to take center stage. Aren't I so great, people? Look at me. I would have been walking into a really well, you know, established place, pretty slick place, new office, big staff, and I'd have a big old stage for me to step out onto. And I could never understand why God wouldn't allow that for me. God, I was made to do this. You gave me the gifts to do this thing. I think I'm kind of good at it. I enjoy this whole deal. What you're like, why? This is it, God. Why would this not be for me? And so it was at this training that I realized that I think God wanted to do something in me, and that planting a church was the step that I needed to take to learn that lesson and to see what God could do in me. God, here's what I started learning, that God wanted my faith and my confidence and my trust to grow, not in me, not in how great I was, but that God wanted my faith and my confidence and my trust to grow in him. Less of me, more of him. And I had this sense that planting a church was the way that I was going to learn that lesson the best. Because here's the deal with planting a church. It's humbling. It's hard work. I mean, we didn't start with a whole lot, and over the last couple of years, I've essentially been doing the job of like 3 or 4 or 5, you know, people that would be doing the same kind of stuff in other churches, preaching and teaching and caring for people and keeping up databases and communication and planning and marketing and trying to roll out small groups and reach out into the community and get a youth group going, right? There's all things I'm trying to, these plates I keep spinning, and don't get me wrong, be very clear about this. I didn't say that I'm doing any of these things well. Just said that these were the things that a church needed to have going, and I was the one responsible for them. And so here's what that means. Here's what happened as I took this step to plant a church, when I took this step that I felt like God wanted me to take. I quickly realized, when I took this step, I quickly realized, and I'm being very serious about this, I quickly realized I'm an idiot. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I quickly realized I'm an idiot, but here's what happened. Great things started happening around me. People's lives started to change, and my faith in God started to increase. Because I didn't know what I was doing, right? But good things were happening, and so my faith in God started to increase, and God is getting all the credit. And that's exactly the way it should be. Right? I just wanted the opportunity that said, hey, Sten, step out onto this big stage. But God had a different plan. God said, hey, no, I want you to learn something. I want to do something in you before I do something for you. And that's what it was. I realized I'm an idiot. Good things are still happening. My faith in God is increasing, and what he's doing through someone like me that doesn't know what he's doing, right? And God is getting all the credit. Don't get me wrong. I was really bummed that the other opportunity, didn't work out, didn't come through. But not a day goes by where I don't realize that it would have been so wrong for me. So wrong. For so many different reasons. It was, I kid you not, it was 100% the wrong gig for me. And so God kept me waiting. And he did something in me before he was going to do something for me. And I think it's exactly what he was orchestrating with Lazarus and with everybody who was watching. And I think what he does with us, we wait. And then God shows up and he gets all the credit and our faith increases. Just because God is making us wait, it does not mean that he is running late. And so if you're waiting on God right now for anything, chances are, I don't know, but chances are you're waiting on him to do something for you. But I'm just wondering if it's at all possible that he's wanting to do something in you before he does something for you. And so if you're in a season with waiting, a season of waiting right now, I'm just asking you to hold on. I'm just asking you to believe that God is still good even when you're waiting. I'm asking you to believe that God does see you and that God does hear you and that God does care about you and that God does really care about what you're experiencing right now. And I'm just asking you to believe that just because he might be asking you to wait, just because he might be asking you to hold on, it does not mean that he's running late. It does not mean that he's not gonna show up. It's just possible that he wants to do something in you before he does something for you. Maybe he wants to build humility or trust or patience in you. Maybe he wants to build confidence in you. Maybe he wants to soften a heart that has become hardened. Maybe he wants to calm a heart that has grown angry and has grown bitter. Maybe he wants to help heal an old wound in you. Maybe he wants to help develop something in you that is not there yet. I don't know what it is for you, but I really do believe it's worth waiting for. I can tell you the position I wanted so badly was so wrong for me. It was the wrong one, and I'm in the right one now. I just had to wait for it. I had to wait for it, yes, but it's the right one and it's the best one for me. And as a result of it, my faith is growing in God and God is getting all the credit. And I'm praying the same thing would happen for you. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks for all the good things that you are doing. And God, for any of us here that feel like we're waiting for you to do some of that good stuff in our life. God, for anyone here that's waiting on you to show up or waiting for things to become clear or waiting for whatever, God, I just pray that maybe even in the smallest little voice, you would whisper to them, hey, I'm here, I see you, I got you. I'm not late. I'm not turning my back on you. I'm not ignoring you. God, I pray that we might know that you're there and that you're working for our good, God. And I just pray that we would be open, God, that we would be open to asking the question, God, is there something maybe that you want to do in me before you do something for me, God? Would you help us to see what that is? Would you help us to pursue that, God, with faith and with trust and with confidence? God, would you be there walking alongside of us as we do ask that question, as we pursue what it is you might be doing in our hearts and our lives? In our faith. God, thanks for this morning, for your just wild and incredible love for us. We give you thanks and we pray these things in your name. Amen.